Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell. Guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres. You can follow me on Instagram at AskAdamTorres. And if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. Okay, so today I have Pete Martin on the line, and he is founder and CEO of Votum. Pete, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate it. I'm super honored to be on the show. We've got a pretty big mission to talk about, so I'm super excited to have a little bit of fun today.
Yeah, this is going to be fun, and excited is an understatement on my end. I mean, it's not often I get to talk to, you know, an entrepreneur or business owner that has a big, big mission of upgrading democracy. Like we were preparing for this, I was trying to wrap my head around it. And I'm like, wow, this is big. Like, you're really looking at making a difference and doing some big things. So I'll start. We're going to get into Votum. We'll talk about specifically what you're doing, how you're doing it, how you're solving a lot of big critical challenges out there. And just to get us started, I'll start this show like we start them all. So Pete, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. So that's our mission here. Pete, what mission matters to you?
The biggest mission that matters to Votum when we talk about upgrading democracy is we want to try to restore trust in elections globally. So if we talk about what happened in the US last year and is still perpetuating right now between misinformation, disinformation, right? The fact of the matter is that trust in the outcome in an election is at an all-time low. There is a group called the Edelman Trust. They have the Edelman Trust Barometer. Mm-hmm. What they found is that the trust in elections and trust in government and trust in election outcomes globally is at an all-time low over the last, I think, 60 or 80 years that they've been studying this. So that's our mission, is to restore trust. And we think the most important factor in restoring trust is to give the individual voter, the citizen, the verifiable proof that their vote was counted exactly as they cast their ballot. That's this really difficult mission that we're trying to chase after.
Yeah, that's a big one, Pete. And this is one that's going to change, you know, the fates of many. And I love it. And this is one of the reasons that I was excited to have you on the show today. And so maybe so we'll go further down that path, but I'd like to know a little bit more about just like Pete, like how did you get started on this mission just as a business owner and on this journey to want to tackle this type of problem?
So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I was kind of genetically encoded entrepreneur. My grandfather was, my father was. I don't think I had a choice. So Votum is actually my fifth company. And I sold my last business about a little over 5 years ago. And I've always been interested in politics. I ran for president of my student government, you know, in high school, and just have kind of always watched from the sidelines with a fascinating curiosity. So when I sold my business, I very seriously thought about going into politics at the state level in Ohio, which is where we're headquartered. And a lot of my friends and family who know me just said, you know, Pete, you're the classic type A entrepreneur. You know, politics is a completely different animal. You know, you're not a very patient man. You know, just make sure that that's what you really want to do, because we think you're going to go crazy, right? So, you know, I talked to a lot of advisors on the political front and kind of had that rattling around in the back of my head. And I ended up going to a CEO conference put on by a gentleman by the name of Peter Diamandis. And Peter Diamandis has run what's called the XPRIZE and Singularity University, and very good friends with Elon Musk and folks like that. And so he's got a very different perspective on the world and perspective on business. So at this conference, called Abundance 360, he had everybody in the audience go through this exercise, this little workshop. Yeah. And the workshop was basically take out a blank piece of paper and write down what you're going to do before you die that will positively impact 1 billion people in the world. Okay.
Wow.
And so his point was, you know, you're all business people, you know how to make money, create wealth, whatever, but don't focus on the money, focus on impact, right? And so this is a way to kind of reframe that thinking of, you know, what could be your life legacy, right? What is your impact? And I didn't know this question was coming. So I sat there for 5 minutes just going, oh my God, you know, to impact 1 billion people, what would I do? And I literally wrote down mobile voting on this piece of paper. And I'm like, wow, where did that come from, right? And the more I looked at these two words, I thought, for me personally, like, this is the perfect intersection for me. I've been in technology my entire career. This is a way to get into politics without being square in the center of politics, right? And most importantly, it was a big impact. And you know, since it was my fifth company, my four companies prior to that were great, you know, and we had a mission, but it was kind of a small mission, right? Yeah. And whatever market we were playing in, but it wasn't really, you know, nobody kind of missed us if we went away, if you, you know, from that perspective, it wasn't really kind of this global big impact thing. So I thought about that and I, you know, I spent a lot of money for this conference and I literally spent the rest of the conference writing down the 100 questions about voting. At the time I'm like, who buys election systems? Like, how does this happen? And who, you know, right? I didn't know any of this stuff. So I spent the next 6 months talking to a lot of people about, is there a market opportunity here? Is this something, is this really an impact that we could make? You know, or is this just a pipe dream? Why are we not doing it right now? All that kind of stuff. So that's how I got started in this particular, this next venture of mine.
Wow. What a story. And it's like, sometimes when those moments of inspiration hit, I mean, many years in the making to get to that point, to be at that conference, to be at that place. And I want to, so just for context for everybody watching this, we're recording this in 2021, because people will be watching this for years and years and years. So 2021. And so I want you to maybe start out with the, like, painting the picture of the current voting landscape. And let's just say, we could say what's wrong, we could say the opportunities, what's broken. I mean, lots of different ways to word it, but it's not, definitely not perfect. So, like, give us your views on some of the opportunity areas for the current voting landscape.
Yeah, so we'll focus a little bit on the U.S. first, and then I'll kind of pull out a little bit and we'll talk about what's going on around the world at a macro level. So in the U.S., for those of you who are listening now, if it's 10 years from now, you'll look back at the 2020 elections and say, my God, what just happened in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
And effectively, so we had the highest turnout that we've had in a long, long time, 40-some years, right? But at the end of the day, the loser, President Trump, and a lot of folks kind of in the political environment have sown a lot of mistrust in the outcome, okay? And this has been adjudicated in 60 courts. There was claims of fraud, claims that the election was stolen from him and all the kind of good stuff. And I'm not going to get political at all. Sure. I want to talk about the fabric of the voting process and the election systems, right? And what's really kind of happened now is There was a growing trust in moving towards electronic voting on electronic voting machines, perhaps online voting, which is the stuff that we're doing, you know, everything kind of away from paper ballots. And so what's happening now is there's a movement back towards moving to paper, right? Which is how we did it basically 100 and some years ago. And a lot of that is because of this trust in something called software that we can't see it, we can't feel it, we can't touch it. So it's, you know, we don't trust it as much. And then obviously the legitimate fear of hacking, right? And we know that nation states were trying to interfere with the elections. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But between all of that and then all of the stuff that's happening in social media, it's right. Just created this environment where, you know, we're supposed to be this beacon of democracy and we're supposed to think that we have a great process to elect our leader. And it's at an all-time low, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this conflict between how elections are run and the verifiability of them and our trust in that process and accessibility. So let's just say we agree, even though I don't agree, that paper is the best method, right?
Right.
There's a whole demographic of people in the U.S. and globally that can't maybe get to the poll, right? For lots of reasons. I'll give you a personal story around that. Or they physically can't handle a paper ballot because of, you know, abilities that they don't have. And so there's always this tension between making voting accessible and making it secure and verifiable and transparent, right? And so in the US, we've kind of been this, we're going through this giant demographic experiment right now, which is why we call it upgrading democracy, of we're actually going back into the past in ways that we did a long time ago, even though the rest of the world and everything else we do in our lives is moving to electronic, right? From hailing a cab on Uber to paying our taxes to banking to you name it, medical records, everything, right, is moving in the electronic direction. And in the election space, we're moving in the other way. This is kind of crazy. There are countries around the world that have moved in this direction a little bit more. That we have, there's a little country called Estonia that's been doing this for about 12 years. There's a very interesting story kind of going on in Brazil right now. Brazil has been doing electronic voting for 12 or 14 years now. Mm-hmm. It's not online voting, but it's electronic voting where you literally go into an electronic machine and, you know, cast your ballot.
Right.
And the current president now is kind of sowing some distrust, saying that he doesn't trust the machines that they've been using for 14 years and he wants to go back to paper ballots, right?
Yeah.
The reason for that is it's less secure, right? And it's much more easy to manipulate. And, you know, there's lots of stories about, you know, ballot boxes full of paper ballots, mm-hmm. not showing up at the precinct, right? Or
for
showing
sure.
up at a dumpster or sitting in some trunk, you know, somewhere.
Yeah.
And so the global landscape and the US landscape of voting is just in this kind of disarray of, I think that there are a lot of people, if you talk to the normal citizen, and we've done tons of surveys on this with mm-hmm. thousands of people, and they will say, I support online voting if you can convince me, Pete, that it's safe and secure.
Right.
We know it's a better way to vote. And I'll share some stories in the show about that. We just want to know that we can trust it. And one of the things that we're working on actively, and it's a big part of our mission, is if you can give people that confidence that their vote was actually counted, right, then we can help start to begin to restore that trust. Mm-hmm. So the story that I always ask people, the question I always ask people, let's just say you believe going to a polling place and filling out a paper ballot feels more secure.
Right.
The minute you leave that polling place, how do you know that vote was counted?
You don't.
You don't.
You do not. Right?
You absolutely
We've
do not.
We've seen enough stuff on social media that were legit videos, whatever. We're not getting political, but just in general, whatever. We know that like paper allows for other things to happen for
that's
sure.
That's exactly right. And so people kind of forget that when you think about it. So so it's this very interesting dilemma of the normal citizen says, I think it's a better method, just convinces it's secure and it can't be hacked, right? And you've got elections officials, the ones who actually run elections, who will say, we kind of support it too. We don't necessarily understand the tech, but as long as the experts say this is okay, we're good with it.
Right.
And then you get the elected officials, right? And that's kind of where the problem comes in, because we say in the voting space that our job is to convince the losers that they lost fair and square. Right. Yeah. That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
And so we have some technology that finally you can have all kinds of stakeholders in an election. You can have, you know, candidates, parties, media, elections observers can all validate every single vote in real time with some technology we have. That's never been done before.
Wow.
Right. And so if we can kind of move to that direction where everybody gets the chance to audit kind of mathematically every single vote that comes in, mm-hmm. you may not like the outcome of the election, but you can't dispute it, right? You can't contest it. And that's the big mission. And it's a really big one. It's a really hard one, but it's a worthwhile pursuit.
You know, and as you say this, it's like one of those things that it seems, as soon as you say it, it's common sense. Like who wouldn't want it number one? Like if you had that confidence that your vote was counted and just thinking about just like the potential for what could happen with that, like how much more of a turnout we'd have. Cause I don't like, I feel like many people don't show up just cause they feel their vote's not going to be counted. And I don't mean literally by any type of fraud. I just mean like in general, they think that their voice doesn't matter as a participant in democracy. So they feel kind of isolated from it. Now, whether that's, you know, right, wrong, doesn't matter, but that's the feeling for a lot of people. And so now if you had that, like, that even if it wasn't real time, which the amazing thing is that you're working on real time. This is the way I've always seen it. Like you get a confirmation email for everything. You get a confirmation for everything. You go to the bank, if I go buy a stick of gum from 7-Eleven right now, I'm going to get a confirmation in the form of a receipt. So when you think about something as huge as who are our elected leaders and officials, it sounds like obvious. And I don't get like how maybe people don't get that.
Here's a crazy concept too. So there is a law, and I can't remember the exact statute in federal banking, right? So if you think about electronic banking versus going to a branch or whatever, right? Yeah. So let's say you go to an ATM, you withdraw some money, you deposit some money, right? You get an ATM receipt, right? Mm-hmm. So under federal law, the electronic transaction record actually trumps anything that is on that paper receipt. Mm. So there's this movement towards, you know, paper ballots and a paper receipt. But the fact of the matter is, under normal statutes in the US, that electronic transaction is way more verifiable. It's indisputable versus that little piece of paper that I kind of just made up anywhere, right? It's kind of crazy. And so again, it's common sense stuff that, you know, when it comes to elections, like all common sense seems to have kind of flown out the window. It's kind of crazy.
Let's go further. I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but I want to get into the heart of it. So let's go further into Votum and exactly how this works. So first off, maybe just tell us a little bit more about the company.
Yeah. So the company is a little bit about 5 years old, and we use this technology called blockchain. We're not going to go into the technology at all. We'll talk about kind of what it enables, I think, which is most important. And today we have tallied over 13 million votes on our platform. Now, the majority of that has been private elections, but in the 2020 elections, we did support a couple states for what's called UACAVA voters, for basically the military and overseas voters. And the way that it works, and it's, if you're not in the industry, it's kind of, some of this terminology is a little bit confusing, but they don't actually vote. They submit their ballot electronically through us, and we encrypt that ballot, and then the elections officials decrypt the ballot. They turn it into kind of plain text, whatever, and then they process it as they normally would. But to the voter themselves, they voted online. They don't know any different, right? They marked their ballot online. They got a submission. They got a receipt. They got a confirmation. They filled out an affirmation that they are who they are. Yeah. We went through the whole process of authenticating that they, you know, they were a registered voter. So that whole thing, you know, to them, they voted online. And the beautiful thing about this constituency, the military and overseas voters, and we support disabled voters in the state of Montana as well. Awesome. I'll talk about that in a second. When you're serving military personnel and their families, right? These are the men and women who are supporting our right to vote, right? That's what they put their lives on the line to do this. And so this kind of came about many, many years ago, where the Department of Defense basically said, you guys are making it really hard for our military people to go vote. And the average turnout in that kind of constituency has been about 7 or 8% historically. Wow. Okay. It's horrible because the process was so difficult.
Yeah.
And so we've been able to, you know, really make this process a lot easier, both in terms of an elapsed time and just the ease of it. And we've got emails from, you know, we had an email from a woman, a guy on a ship in the Mediterranean for one of our states, who said, you know, I'm from this state. I just voted online. This was so easy. This is phenomenal. I'm sitting next to a guy from, I won't name the other state, but from another state, who they won't allow him to do this. And he's got to wait 3 weeks for his ballot and then fill it out and hope to God it makes it back in time. Right. Wow. And I just did this. Please, you know, do this in other states. Like, it's phenomenal. And so again, it's just, it's kind of crazy that that shouldn't be the, that should be the standard. Right.
So tell me a little bit more about like the user experience. So for that, like it could be for that gentleman in the military or just in general. So, you know, I'm in California. So if California starts using it, like what would it look like for me? Like how would that work?
There's really kind of three steps, really four steps in the process where we want to give you the evidence that your vote was counted. So the first one is we want to actually prove that Adam Torres is actually Adam Torres in each state. Varies on how they do that. Typically, we want a combination of your full name, your address, and the last four of your social and your birth date, right? So every state kind of has different ways they authenticate you.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the first step. So, and we do that against the voter registration database. Mm-hmm. So, or in some states, we actually do the registration kind of in process. Mm-hmm. So you authenticate yourself. That's kind of the first proof point, if you will.
Which is pretty obvious. Like, of course, they want to know it's you are you. Okay, go ahead.
That's right. Right. And, you know, in some cases we can do thumbprint, we can do your, we can identify your face, you know, scan your face against a driver's license. Mm-hmm. So it just literally depends not on the technology, but on the statute in the state that we're working with.
Got it.
So we prove that you are you, that you're actually Adam and that you're voting. And then based on that, we know what precinct you're in. So we know exactly what type of ballot to give you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then we give you a ballot, and where the complexity of elections comes in is, you know, you could have somebody on the other side of town who's mm-hmm. going to get a different ballot because you might have mill levies or bond issues or school district stuff yep. that's relevant for you, but not the guy or the lady that's on the other side.
So it's highly customized is what it
very customized, to. Right? Mm-hmm. There are thousands and thousands of styles for any particular yeah. state or even county. So we give you the proper ballot. You mark your ballot. You say, all right, that's exactly how I wanted my vote to be cast. You hit submit. That's your next evidence point. Okay. And we're tracking all this stuff, not the markings, but the fact that you submitted a ballot.
Yes.
At that point, we actually essentially remove your identity from the ballot. Okay. Mm. So we know that step one, you were authenticated. Mm-hmm. Then we kind of forget that you're Adam after we serve you up the proper ballot. And then when you set submit and confirm, then we basically separate that ballot from your identity. Okay. Mm. Then you get another confirmation that basically the servers received it. Okay. Mm. So you marked it exactly as you intended. That's the second proof point. Third proof point basically is we received your ballot, right? Then the final one, which is, this is the only technology where we can do this. You can't do it with paper. You can't do it with electronic voting, is if you give us, is we give you basically this code. Mm-hmm. And then once we do the counting, right, we shuffle all the ballots. So if you imagine there's a ballot box, physical ballot box, and somebody's shaking it and they dump it out on the table and start to read them, you know, tally them. We do that electronically, and we do that in a very secure encrypted environment. Mm-hmm. Then we go, we decrypt the ballots, and then we count them. We do a check on that to make sure that whatever, if 100 ballots came in, 100 ballots kind of got counted. And then we create to a bulletin board, another, basically a log of all the ballots that we tallied. And then you can compare your number to that bulletin board. And if they match, you know that nothing changed, not a bit, not a mark, nothing changed between the time you marked your ballot and the time we counted it, right? It is the only technology of the entire voting system where we can do that. So you now know factually, irrefutably, mm-hmm. that your ballot was counted exactly as you cast it, right? That's the power of what we do.
It's so logical and like, so like you walking me through that user journey, it seems like you've taken like, I mean, you know, all this complication, everything else. I mean, the main thing with voting too, in my opinion, is that like, it has to be simple to where somebody, anybody can understand, like whether you're high in, you know, really advanced in tech or other things, like for whatever it's worth, you have to be able to understand it. You have to be able to understand the process and get that thing like within a minute. Right. I can probably, so your user journey, sign up, you have to say who you are, like, going to vary depending on what state you're in, whether it's facial recognition, whether it's a thumbprint, whether it's, you know, type in your name, you know, social, or last four of your social, whatever. So now we know who you are. After you verified who you are, you're able to do the voting. The voting's highly customized towards you, towards your county, so that things as small as, or as important, not just small, but details as small as, you know, a local school bond that thinking about your voting dollars. Do I want to spend money to support that or not? Like something that granular is not going to be missed. You cast your vote.
And let's compare it to paper-based voting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple concepts here that we basically solve for. So the first is, as many times as you ask somebody to fill in the little bubble with the black pen, right? Yeah. Inevitably, people will put an X or a check.
Oh, really?
Or the hanging Chad back from 2000, right?
Yeah.
And by law, those have to be rejected. Okay. So no matter how many times you tell somebody to do that, they just don't read people don't read instructions, right? So A, we solve for that. The second thing is, let's just say you have a contest where it says you can only vote for one person. You can only, you know, mark mm-hmm. one candidate for president. Inevitably, people will vote for two, right? Or something. we can keep you from doing that electronically. We won't let you mark two. We can only let you mark one, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. That's called overvoting. Then there's a concept called undervoting, which says by law for this statute, you have to pick one choice, right? Mm. Some people be, you know, on paper ballots might say, you know, well, I didn't read up on it. I don't study it. I'm not going to mark it. Ballot gets rejected. Okay. Wow. So we control it. We literally won't let you go to the next contest until you mark that. So these very simple human errors, we solve for all of that stuff, right?
Wow. So just
before you ever submit your ballot. So yeah. So we know by the time you get to the point of submitting your ballot, mm-hmm. you know, all of those kind of common typical errors that happen and all these yeah. ballots that get rejected, we don't get them rejected. So you can't move until you complete the ballot.
Oh man, okay. Which is terrible because somebody's thinking that they voted or that they did this and they did that. And they're like, oh, they didn't mark the ballot right. Or they just missed something. And because of that, they took their time. They thought they were participating and then it wasn't counted.
Yep.
Which brings me to the next part of your process, which was essentially they voted, they've submitted. Now Adam on that electronic vote is no longer Adam. Now I'm just a number. I have right. that number. The number is also associated with the ballot that I submitted, the electronic, I should say, ballot that I submitted.
Yep.
Now everything's mixed up. Not my answers, but like the tally's mixed up.
It's anonymous. It's anonymous at that point. Right.
So you're basically like, if you were a dealer, you're shuffling the cards or you're washing the cards there.
Yep.
If you're so when it comes back to you and you're looking at like, was your vote like counted or not? Well, number one, when you did the submission, you received your confirmation there. Yep. The next point of confirmation, correct me if I'm wrong, is now when the tally comes out, so to speak, and all the votes are listed, you can match your number, the number on your system, so that now you can say, okay, that was my vote. I know because I have the number. I have the confirmation. That was mine. My answers were counted. They were not changed.
That's exactly right. And the way that our technology works in this thing called blockchain is there's this concept called validators. So you can think of them as auditors, right? And so there's essentially a mathematical formula to say, does all the software code add up by the time I kind of get to each step of the process? Mm-hmm. And of all the auditors, if you will, 2/3 of those auditors have to agree mathematically that things are adding up. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's not 100% is let's just say, somebody attacks one of the servers and the server goes down, right? So you don't ever want to be in a place where you got 100%. So it's called this consensus mm-hmm. protocol. And as long as 2/3 always agree each step of the way, mm-hmm. you know factually that everything is copacetic. And so this concept of, and I'll kind of give you a real story. So we've for the fourth or fifth year, we've just run the vote for the Radio Hall of Fame. We just finished out. There's, I think, 100 some thousand votes. And the first year that we did this, they moved from paper ballots to online ballots, and their auditor, so they actually hire an audit firm to actually audit the results. So we set up this separate server for the auditing firm and said, and once we did that, we literally cut off all access. So if something happened to it, we're like, you're kind of on your own. We can't do anything. We literally cut off our own access. And then we had a server and we were validating every vote that came in real time. And it used to be they would take a couple days after the election to actually certify the results, right? Because yeah. they wanted to do the audit and they're looking at ballots, whatever. They've now moved to within 10 to 20 minutes after the election's over, they certify the results.
Wow.
That's the power of what we do.
That's amazing. What kind of response did you get from that? I'm just curious.
As you might imagine. So the board for the Radio Hall is very happy. The chairman is very happy. And think about it, like from a candidate perspective,
yeah,
everybody's kind of waiting, you know, oh my God, you know, are these the results and are you certified them and did I win or did I not win? So everybody's on pins and needles. And what we found is the longer that it takes, the more doubt it sows, right?
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. And so, you know, just like happened in the U.S. presidential election, right, as the results kept coming in later and later and later, it sowed more and more doubt. So if you yeah. can deliver results like that and you have these external auditors and independent authorities saying everything, all the math worked out properly mm-hmm. and we gave you the results in 10 minutes, doubt kind of goes away. So.
Yeah, that's huge. That's big time. And that's just proof positive. And it seems to me like the more people use this technology, you know, state by state, county by county, however this has to go, which brings me to my next question. But that just means like the trust will build. They'll see it. The more people do it. Like if I was one of those voters voting in that particular election and I feel this like real time, like experience, and then I have to go deal with when it's time to do my, you know, state or local or, you know, federal elections, then I'm thinking about like, what I have to do? What? Why can't I just use, what was that thing I did for this other vote? Like that worked. Why can't I do that? Like logically, it just makes sense that the adoption rate would over time improve, which brings me to my next question. So like, so what's next? Like what's next for you? What's next for Votum? Like where do we go from here?
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you just to kind of hit off that last point of the, we do a little survey of all of our voters afterwards. Mm-hmm. 99%, I don't know if it's 100%, I'm sure some people have not filled out the survey, but 99% of the people say this is vastly superior to voting in any other method. So we know we're in the right direction here. So, you know, there's kind of four big challenges we have to attack. One is just the technological challenge in terms of proving to security researchers and academics and public officials, frankly, that the technology is sound, that it works, that it's legitimate, and frankly, that it can't be hacked. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you've got all the political issues, which we're not going to deal with. We're going to let kind of somebody else would deal with that. And then you got social issues of, I can't see the technology. Yes, this is an easier user experience, but I want to know that, you know, the results are legitimate and they haven't been hacked and manipulated, right? So there's kind of a social media communications thing around that we can influence a little bit. And so we're kind of focusing on, you know, those two paths, which ultimately will lead to running a lot more pilots. And we know that the more pilots we run successfully, you know, without incident and people get used to this method.
I mean, speaking of pilots, so you gave us one. So like, is there anything else planned? Like how do you plan to kind of expand that thought process? Because I feel like pilots is the way. I mean, I would say that, hey, sign us up over here at Mission Matters. What kind of vote? What can we do a vote on? But all jokes aside, what you're doing is much more serious. This isn't like an online poll. This isn't something like that. Like this has the real truth and potential to literally upgrade democracy, which again, that's a big statement, bold claim, but it's pretty obvious. If people feel empowered to participate more, if they feel that their vote counts, their vote matters, if they get, you know, real time or faster results, all these things add up. So so pilots, like how do you plan to continue on that part of the mission?
Yeah, what we're focused on right now for the next election cycle in 22 and even 24 is winning the trust and the confidence of elected officials and elections officials that actually run. I mean, the way that we're doing that, as well as citizens, is we actually own the patent for something called express voting. So the concept is, you know, on your phone, you authenticate that you're an eligible voter, you get your ballot, you mark your ballot, you submit it. And instead of actually casting an actual vote, it creates a QR code. Okay. And by law, in most states, you still have to go to the polling place. Okay. So think about FastPass, or think about you pre-order your Starbucks, right? Or whatever kind of a similar kind of analogy. And so the idea is we can then go to a polling place where, and we saw in 2020, these massive lines, right, in Georgia and everywhere of people that waited 4 hours, 6 hours to go vote. Mm-hmm. So we can now deliver a fast pass line, if you will, where you've already marked your ballot. Once you check in, then you literally hold that QR code up against the machine. Mm-hmm. It prints off your printed ballot that's already marked.
Yeah.
You hand it over to the elections official and you're done. And so we can massively accelerate the time that it takes you to actually go into the polling place, you know, cast your vote, all the time it kind of takes to do that. We basically eliminate all of that. And so the benefit of that is we can operate in all 50 states. We can eliminate, you know, majority of the lines at the polling place, and it's still a paper ballot and you're not changing any of the process. So we can kind of fit into the existing voting infrastructure without changing anything. And it's really indisputable because you're not actually voting online. And we think the benefit of that is it's this perfect ramp to the citizens getting super comfortable with, I kind of voted online, right? And that was a vastly easier process. And we already have the technology to not create a QR code to basically hit submit, right? Yeah. And then your vote is cast. And so we're, you know, we can just kind of literally kind of flick a switch to get to that point. So that's what we're focused on for 2020. We call it Vote and Go. And we think that if we can build a groundswell of people who just say, my gosh, I want to do that because that's way easier. And yeah. I trust it because I'm printing off a printed ballot. Mm-hmm. We'll be in a much better position in 2024 and beyond to really, really make a huge impact in the U.S.
So it's almost like a concert ticket, right? Like once upon a time at Ticketmaster, you used to have to wait in line at your stadium, and then you got to pay, then you got to bring out your credit card. And then at another point in time, you're like, oh, wait, I can just pay online. Okay, great. I pay online. Then I print out my little sheet. Then I go and I get right in. I don't have to wait in that other line.
That's so exactly right.
Just like a concert going experience, if you will. But the big benefit here too is, correct me if I'm wrong, you still get all the other benefits and features. So you get the confirmation, you know, that's right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're not, you scan something like that bucket of scans, or however I would say that, you correct my verbiage on that, like that can't disappear. A record. Am I off on that, or is that?
Nope. You're exactly right. You know, and the other analogy you can think about is probably the most, from a citizen perspective, the most secure environment right now is an airport, right? So it's like a boarding pass now that's, you know, on your phone, you know, and I don't see too many paper boarding passes anymore. I mean, there's some, but not a lot, right? And they let you through what's supposed to be the tightest security in the world with electronic, you know, QR code on your phone, right? Is, you know, what's more important, voting or, you know, getting on an airline? I'm not sure.
I love it. No, it's great. Makes a lot of sense. For the record, I like my analogy better. It's fun. I want people to think of voting as fun. You're going to a concert, like vote.
Good point. I do like it too. I'm a big music guy. So yeah, I like your analogy too.
If everybody hasn't caught that, get out and vote.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh man. Well, Pete, I have to tell you, I'm a big fan of what you're doing and what's going on over at Votum. I look forward to the day when I can use your technology and doing that. I'm going to remember this interview for sure. And this start, and really it's a big shift that you're looking to make worldwide with this technology. So
sure.
That being said, great having you on the show. If somebody is listening to this or watching this and they want to learn more about Votum or to connect with you and your team, I mean, what's the best way for them to get involved?
And they can just go to our website, which is votum.com, VOTEM.com. And there's a couple places where they can subscribe. And we need help, frankly, you know, whether it's writing letters to politicians, you know, participating in pilots, contributing to you know, what we call our voting protocol. We need a community to, you know, any mission, you need a community, right? And so this is one that we need a really big community if we're going to make this, you know, a big impact in the U.S. and around the world in any time in the near future. So votum.com is the place to go to sign up to kind of get involved.
Amazing. Well, Pete, again, thank you for coming on the show today. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hope you got a lot of value out of this. Hope you learned a lot. If you did, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We definitely want you to be a return listener, return visitor, have many more mission-based entrepreneurs and business owners and executives coming on the line. And we don't want you to miss anything. And Pete, it really has been a pleasure. Big fan of Votum. Happy to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Adam. It was a really fun time and super informational, and I appreciate the dialogue and the back and forth. Thanks for having me on the show.